This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 33 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. Just a note that this is the last Frankly MSP episode for 2018. We'll take a short break around the holidays and be back in your earbuds with a fresh episode on January 10th, 2019. Also wanted to let you know that we've recently expanded the Frankly MSP umbrella. It started with this podcast, of course, the Frankly MSP podcast, but Avik has now launched a totally revamped resource center on our website called the Frankly MSP Resource Center. It pulls together all the Avik blog posts, all these podcast episodes, our free webinars and ebooks, new video content we've been working on, and more. You can sort the content by category or by format, and you can search by keyword. And the goal here is really to connect you with the information you need and are looking for to build your MSP and a successful managed network service. You'll find the Resource Center and all that information at avik.com/franklymsp. Rumor has it we're also working on a Frankly MSP conference for January 2020. What? Did I say that out loud? Yes! It's only a year and a bit away, and it's going to be awesome. We're right in the middle of planning it all now, and I think you're going to love it. And naturally, you as a Frankly MSP listener will get sneak peeks and first dibs on all things related to that conference. So stay tuned throughout 2019 for more news and developments on that front. Now, on with the show. Today, I'm chatting with Luis Alvarez of Alvarez Technology Group, a California-based MSP that's built themselves a nice little niche, or as you Americans like to say, niche, in IoT services for agricultural companies. We talk about how Luis's company got into that niche, challenges they had to overcome in building out their IoT services, and how they've leveraged partnerships with IoT sensor vendors to help their MSP and their clients grow. But first, we turn to Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk for a look at what's going on in the world through an MSP lens.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks.
Hey folks, Richard Tubb back again, and today I'm not at home in Newcastle upon Tyne.
What?
I know, Carl, this is crazy. I'm in Paris, France.
Nice.
I've literally just finished keynoting the MSP Con 2018 conference, which is the biggest conference assembled for French MSPs, biggest conference to date. And it's been a fascinating experience for me. The French MSP market is still a fledgling one. There are lots of IT companies that are still doing break fix in France. So my keynote presentation was talking about my own journey as an IT business owner, moving from break fix to managed services, and the work that I now do on a daily basis with managed service providers and helping them avoid all the many, many mistakes that I made when I was an MSP.
Exactly.
Specifically though, Carl, and I think this will interest you, across here in France, there is little or no IT community, MSP community. Now, you and I have both talked at length about the impact that being able to chat to other MSP owners, to share best practices, to learn has had on the growth of our MSP businesses. And of course, we're both still very active within the MSP community, the wider MSP community now. But here in France, it's actually a fairly new thing. Companies don't collaborate together very much at the moment, but there was a lot of interest after my keynote presentation about what community means and what effect it can have on accelerating MSP business growth. So perhaps, you know, talk to your experience of what community has been like, because you travel extensively.
When I first started traveling abroad within the community, which was about 2006, there were small groups all over the place. A lot of them have faded out, even in the US and the UK. There's only a handful left that are really active. And the one place where they seem to never really fade is Australia. And I think part of that is their isolation, you know. But in the US, we've gone from having three or four dozen really active groups to having maybe one or less than a dozen active groups. But at the same time, lots of younger people have gotten into the business and they don't know the term MSP. Why would they? They think they're computer consultants. And so they're fishing around for who can give them advice. And they're going through with newer technology, exactly what you and I went through 15, 20 years ago which is going on to some online forum and trying to find people who are talking about what we do and asking each other questions and getting help and so forth. The problem is a lot of them are in groups where they're so little experienced that they might be getting advice from people who have no idea what they're talking about. You know, you've seen the old cartoon, when you're on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. Well, it's the same thing when you go onto Reddit or Facebook or something and you ask a question, you might get advice from somebody who has no experience and they're just repeating something that somebody else said to them. It's becoming easier to get some advice and harder to get really good advice.
Perhaps this goes to the point there are more online communities than ever, and there's some excellent communities out there. Our mutual friend Nigel Moore across in Australia runs the Tech Tribe, which I gave a shout out during my keynote presentation today. It is an exceptional community full of very, very smart people, Nigel himself included. But perhaps there aren't enough in-person communities anymore. When you and I started in the industry, there were, as you say, there was a lot of user groups, a lot of forums that where we could get together and chat to other people and build relationships up that way. But perhaps those are fading, with the exception of Australia.
Yeah, there are some active groups. I mean, you know, if you go to Manchester, you're going to get a full house, right? There are places where you're almost guaranteed to get a bunch of people. In Sacramento, we're planning our big Christmas dinner next week. And so far, we have 6 people RSVP'd. I'm sure it'll be 10, but 10 years ago, it would be 20 or 25. So yeah, it's getting a little harder to have people stay connected. And it's harder to find some of the newer people in person because they spend all their time online. And unless Reddit has a local group, they're not likely to find you.
Of course, there's a number of commercial organizations out there that enable people to get together, but it's a commitment of time and money. That's not to diminish the impact they have, because they're excellent. You and I are both very, very familiar with Heartland Technology Group, HTG, which is recently acquired by ConnectWise. Here in the UK, or across the water, I should say, in the UK, we've got things like the Network Group and Synaxon, so on and so forth, which are also excellent. But again, it's a commitment of time and money, and perhaps for the new MSPs to the industry, that commitment is a little bit too far. And that's where we miss the old user groups, isn't it? Where literally get together for beer and a pizza, perhaps, with fellow IT owners.
Well, even our local group, we charge $10 for a meeting, just basically to try to pay for a group. You have enough people show up, then you have to have a meeting space, and meeting space costs money, and, you know, all of that. So it's changed over time, but I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for communities. It's just a matter of figuring out what tools can help the most. And I have loved meetup.com as a way to create groups and have lots of strangers join, you know, people who just are sort of remotely interested. But every once in a while, you can coax some of them to actually show up at a meeting, and then they want to come back again and again.
Now, what else is going on? Well, talking about groups of people, one large group of people, and when I say rather large, I mean 500 million people, were affected by a data breach this week as Marriott customers had their passport number stolen in amongst other data. This is, if not the biggest breach, it's certainly up there, isn't it?
The numbers just get bigger and bigger, yeah. So it was specifically people who started with the Starwood group, and Starwood has been bought by Marriott. But if you were with Starwood, then there were certain times when you're traveling that if you're at Westin or Sheraton or Aloft, they might ask for your passport information. And of course, they've already got your name and your credit card number and your home address and maybe your debit card and enough information to do most of what they need to steal your identity. So the interesting thing is that a lot of the press is around these passport numbers are a new element that people hadn't thought about having stolen. But quite realistically, at least the U.S. government is saying it's not that easy to get a new passport, because getting just that number is one piece, but you need a whole sheaf of additional information in order to renew a passport with a change of address and all of that. They're saying it's not as big of a danger as it sounds like.
But there's something very interesting about this breach that caught your eye, wasn't it, Carl?
Yes. So I found it quite interesting that they said this information has not shown up on the dark web. And what that means, generally speaking, is that it's a state actor. It's a nation state that stole this information because they're not reselling it and they're not trying to sell credit card numbers or anything like that. Sometimes when you hear about these break-ins, you just assume it's the bad guys who are out there selling your credit card information again.
Yeah.
But in this case, it appears not to be. And simply because there's a standard thing they do, which is to look for this sample data on the dark web. And if they don't find it, then they're like, okay, so we wasn't a bad guy. It was a nation. Yeah. I'm not going to say it was a good guy, but it wasn't some evil hacker from Russia that's going to resell your credit card information.
We mentioned this term, don't we, the dark web quite a lot. How would you describe the dark web to one of your MSP customers, Carl?
What I tell end users is that the web that you can see is basically on Google. There is a web where you put in a search term, credit cards, and you're going to get offers for credit cards and Chase and all the banks in the world and so forth. So that's the visible web. The dark web is kind of a separate internet where a bunch of, for the most part, people who want to stay anonymous live. And it's not all evil. So if you think about it, if you were in a country that wanted to suppress free speech, there needs to be a way that you can get in touch with MI5 or the CIA or some nonprofit organization that will help you get out of that country. So there are things on the dark web that are basically not visible to the rest of the world that are also good. They serve good purposes. But there's also a whole big area of the dark web, which is drug smugglers need to not be visible, and people who are moving money illegally need not to be visible, and people who want to have encrypted data that organized crime can take place, they need to not be visible. So usually when we refer to the dark web, we're referring to the parts that are less legitimate and not just private, but private and not well-intentioned.
Indeed. And I am hearing a lot of talk about the dark web from MSPs lately. And the reason MSPs are showing sort of an interest in the dark web, in purely legitimate ways, I should say, is there are tools that have sprung up recently. There's ID Agent and other apps that grab research. You know, they've got their own methods for parsing the dark web and finding these data breaches and then presenting that data to the MSPs and saying, hey, look, here's your customers who have been breached, or here are prospective customers of yours who might have been breached. And of course, that makes a very, very powerful sales opportunity there. MSPs can go to prospective customers and say, did you know your data had been breached? Interesting foot in the door there if you go to somebody and say, here's your password and it's available on the dark web.
Right. And even if you changed your password, like we found this password 247 times, right? It's a way to say, look, even if you change this, did you change it in every one of those accounts? Are you good enough at tracking that? And basically, it's a way to sell not only dark web scans, deeper scans to see what else has been breached, but also to sell services like password management and other things. There's a lot of services that people could be offering to their clients that they haven't thought about simply because it doesn't fit into their nice little wheelhouse that involves servers and printers.
Absolutely. So once again, and this is a recurring theme on what's going on, where we talk about news stories, especially to do with security, this Marriott breach and the similar sort of breaches are actually an opportunity for MSPs to have strong conversations with prospective clients.
We always need to be talking about new stuff so clients know that we're up on this. If the first time they hear about some new technology problem or opportunity is on the radio, we are failing our job. You know, they need to be hearing about that from us in our newsletters and in our conversations and our monthly or quarterly roadmap meetings and so forth.
So interesting story coming out with the Marriott hack. Again, another opportunity for MSPs there. That's what's been going on. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
Now we come to my interview with Luis Alvarez of Alvarez Technology Group, talking about building a niche in IoT. Hi, Lewis. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being on the show today. We're going to talk about something very interesting today, which is IoT in the context of being a managed service provider. And I know that by virtue of your location, your specific location in California, you sort of stumbled across an IoT specialization. So can you tell us about where you are and how that led to your current IoT work?
Sure, Jennifer. We are located in Salinas, California, which is in the central part of California. It's also known as Steinbeck Country. It's where John Steinbeck wrote many of his famous novels about farming and the realities of farm life. You know, this is prime ag land. About 80% of the fresh vegetables that are consumed in the United States come from the Salinas Valley. And that's a huge amount of agriculture. And we've been here for about 18 years and working with a lot of these ag companies. And early on, most of those engagements had to do with working in their data center. Some of these companies may have hundreds, if not thousands, of employees, but for the most part, they have a very small staff, maybe 30 or 40 people that work on computers. And those are the people that we were working with. And we did that for a long time. But as time wore on, these guys started to get much more innovative and introduce other technologies into their environments to help them be more efficient, to reduce costs, to do all the sorts of things that any company does when they're looking to implement new technology. And they asked us to be part of that. And that's how we started our Internet of Things or IoT journey.
Tell us about some of the IoT devices that you're managing for these clients.
Early on, what we were finding was a lot of the what we consider today shadow IT, right? These are the foremen that were working in the field or the warehouse manager that was trying to deal with improving the way they handled the packaging in the warehouse. They went out and they started looking for solutions, not coming to IT, not going to the traditional IT provider or IT department, but instead saying, this is a problem I need to solve on my own. So they would come up with these point solutions. In the case of, for example, a foreman who works the field, he may be managing a couple hundred acres of lettuce, and he needs to figure out how much moisture there is in the ground so that he can determine when they water or irrigate the plants. He may also, in California, you have to monitor things like runoff, where water is going after it's been put in the field, if it's not absorbed into the ground, as well as nitrates, which is a big deal because the nitrates roll into the ocean. So there's all these sensors that track all of this information. The folks that work in the field started implementing this technology without necessarily calling us ahead of time, but we would eventually find out because they needed our support, whether it was to provide them IP addresses, for example, so that they could talk to these devices, or sometimes it was setting up fiber out to the field so that we can connect them up to the backbone, or setting up wireless networks so these wireless devices could talk to the main network. Those were things that they'd call us in on. But by then, we were like kind of behind the eight ball, so to speak. You know, we were trying to figure out what the problem was after the problem happened. What we then started to do is get more proactive with our clients and get smarter about these solutions and the issues that were happening outside of the data center. So we started talking to the warehouse managers. We started talking to the foreman in the field. We started talking to the people that were handling trucking, all of these secondary things that were outside of the data center, and discovered that they were using technology in a way that we needed and to be involved in, and that we could add value to. That's where we started to specialize in IoT.
Now that you've understood that these things are happening, the shadow IT, as you say, you started bringing those under your umbrella and going out proactively now, are you finding that this is a great card to play when you're pitching prospective clients that you can handle these kinds of things?
It is, in the sense that our industry is changing quite a bit. I think that there's still quite a large installed base of infrastructure in the traditional data center servers, that sort of thing. But more and more of that is moving into the cloud. More of what we did as a traditional MSP, manage that infrastructure, doesn't have the same value that it used to have. I mean, the folks that we're dealing with, for example, today who are now millennials, they're a lot smarter about technology and they like to self-service a lot. So they like to take care of their own stuff. So the question we were faced with a few years ago was, how do we add value to what we're providing our clients? So we took a deep dive into the cloud, took a deep dive into cybersecurity, but then also recognized that we had this unique niche as an IoT service provider here in our area that we could leverage, not just for projects, deploying things and plugging them in, but in managing them, because all of these devices have to be managed just like everything else. And in fact, I would argue that they have to be managed even more than a PC or a server, in the sense that a lot of these devices are critical to the way that these farm operations operate. So if one example that I'll give you, a lot of the manufacturing that takes place to put lettuce in those little bags that you buy at the grocery store is a very comprehensive process. And they have these huge manufacturing plants where they have to clean the vegetables before they're chopped and put into bags. And that cleaning takes place with ammonia. So you have these big ammonia tanks that have to be monitored, and they're very volatile, as you can imagine. They have to be monitored 7x24 and make sure the temperatures are right, make sure that the pressure's right. And before that was a manual process that was done with a lot of analog technology, but now it's done largely through the use of SNMP and smart devices that we can monitor and we can alert on. And we can provide proactive support to our clients to make sure those devices aren't going to do anything that's going to jeopardize their operation. And there's many, many more devices than traditional devices on our networks now. I mean, if you look at some of the network diagrams that we have, you'll see several hundred IoT devices and maybe two or three dozen traditional networking and PC and server devices. So they outnumber everything else by quite a bit.
As you were building out this new practice, did you find that you needed new or different tooling to be able to manage these devices effectively?
And yeah, absolutely. We had to find new kinds of tools. So like a lot of MSPs who have been on this journey for a while, we've been using RMM tools forever. But RMM tools are not really good at managing things that are not PCs, things that are not servers. They're great for that sort of stuff. But if you're managing IoT devices, you need a different kind of tool set that speaks SNMP, that speaks different languages, it gives you different visibility, that's a little bit more robust than an RMM tool. So we had to go out and find some of those. We also had to work with some of the vendors to help convert their existing technology so that we could use it. IoT devices early on, and I'll argue even to this date, are very simple. They usually have a single purpose, maybe a couple of purposes, so they're very easy to build. There's not a lot of intelligence built into them. They're just used as sensors and maybe reporting devices. So the intelligence is either in the cloud or in some other management or control device. So we would be working with these vendors that were deploying these sensors, for example, and saying, hey, you need to embed SNMP in there and give us some OIDs that we can alert on. And we were talking a foreign language to them at first. But then as we helped them improve their products, it benefited us and it benefited them in the sense that they could go out to their other customers and say, hey, we've now added some new features, which makes our products even better. We're working with some of these IoT manufacturers now on cybersecurity and improving the security of how they communicate. I mean, early on, for example, some of the wireless devices that we were putting on the networks only worked on open networks. They weren't able to set up any sort of WPA or any sort of encryption, which was, from a security perspective, it was just something we weren't willing to do to put on our networks. But they didn't think it was that big a deal because they said, well, these are IoT devices. Who's going to hijack these things and do anything to them? And the reality is that anytime you create a hole in a network, it's a hole that somebody can exploit. Maybe not now, but at some point. So most recently been working with a lot of these folks that develop IoT technologies for the agricultural industry and explaining to them the importance of security, explaining to them the importance of management and how the more intelligence they put in even the simplest sensor, the better it is for them and for the customers that they're serving.
And how about skill sets? Did you need to hire new people? Did you need to train existing folks?
We did have to retrain. Fortunately for us, I mean, the people that we've had are always anxious to learn new things. And they were seeing that the traditional skill set that they had relied on for their own personal growth was starting to not be as important anymore. When the CEO of Cisco came out a couple of years ago and said, you know, I don't think we're going to need CCIEs in 5 years, that was a real wake-up call to the industry to say the things that we have relied on to get us to where we've gotten are not going to be the things that are going to get us to the next generation of innovation and technology. So we've been introducing our team to different types of technology. I mean, a lot of it is just a natural evolution of what they were doing before, just doing it better. but sometimes it's learning a completely new skill. So for example, one of the areas that we've been very heavily involved in the last 18 months or so is surveillance systems, deploying smart next generation surveillance systems that include 4K cameras, high capacity storage devices, secure networks. A lot of that has to do with the introduction of adult use cannabis in California and some of the regulatory requirements that some of the folks that we're working with are under. But that's a whole different skill set than setting up PCs and servers. And so our guys have had to retrain and learn that and learn not just how to set them up, but how to make them better and how to improve them so that we can add more value to what we do with our clients.
How are you pricing this new service? Is it per sensor or is it a flat fee?
Well, for right now, we're doing it as a flat fee. One of the things I should say is that we don't take on any project that we can't wrap managed services around. That is, we're a managed services provider at our core. For us, recurring revenue and that ongoing revenue stream is what makes us who we are. So deviating from that and doing a bunch of projects and becoming more project focused is not something that we really want to do unless we can wrap managed services around it. So we've had to get creative with some of the IoT services that we provide because it's kind of hard to judge how much time and effort it's going to take. So early on, we took some guesses. We kind of figured, okay, our role here is just to do alerting and get the third-party manufacturer of these IoT devices involved. If there's something that needs to be fixed, we're going to charge X for that. Now that we're doing surveillance systems, because of the criticality of keeping those cameras up and running, which revolves around how cannabis regulations work, we now have cameras that we store that we can replace. You know, we have an inventory, so that's a little bit more expensive, but that's okay. These guys recognize that it's an important component of their business to stay up and running. But we decided to stay away from the per device or per sensor pricing because it would tie us into a lot of inflexibility. And we want the flexibility to say, okay, well, this is the value of the service that we're providing you. And this is what we think that value is worth. And it's different for everybody.
What would you say were the biggest challenges you faced as you built out this IoT practice?
First and foremost, it was being able to get a seat at the table. Because we were viewed as the IT guys, a lot of the decision makers in the operating units that were looking for help, looking for technology to make their lives better, didn't see us as needing to be part of that conversation, other than once we get it installed, we'll be calling you to get some IP addresses and things like that. So getting that seat at the table where we can offer our advice and we could learn and gain insight into what was important to the client was a real critical factor. And that just took a lot of conversation. We leveraged the trust that we had built with a lot of these clients by delivering services in the more traditional IT way and letting them know that, hey, we want to learn along with you. And we think if we could learn, we can provide a lot of value down the road because we're going to be smarter for it. Once we overcame that initial objection, the rest was to learn a whole different lexicon. IoT manufacturers talk a different language. They have different protocols. They have different ways of looking at the world. They're evolving as we're evolving. So being willing to partner with them and offer advice. So an example of that was about 4 years ago, we had a sensor company that is very well known in this area for their water sensors, their moisture sensors, but their technology was pretty antiquated and they were using on-prem controllers to manage the devices. And we said, you know, you really need to move that to the cloud. You really need to start looking at a cloud-based controller solution for your technology because other people are going to go there and then you're going to be left behind. I can tell you that farmers, like most people who own businesses, don't want to spend the money to keep a bunch of devices cool or keep a bunch of devices on-prem if they can avoid it. So the faster you can get to the cloud, the better you're going to be. And they appreciated that because it helped them move faster into something that they would eventually have to do anyway. So now those sensors are all managed by cloud-based controller. They're wirelessly connected. It was a great partnership and one that we've been able to leverage because when they deploy their technology to new locations or new areas, and they need IT support or to recommend IT support, we're the ones that they always recommend because of the relationship that we built with them.
You mentioned earlier on that IoT has become a great niche for you. What are you seeing in the marketplace in terms of other MSPs picking up this area?
That's an interesting question. There's a lot of talk and there's a lot of interest. I was at an event recently where I was sitting on a panel and talking about IoT. There were some questions in the audience about similar to what you're asking, you know, how do you get involved? What do you do? And I always say, start small, make sure that you start with something that you can hold on to and develop a practice around. So for example, if you're doing a lot of doctor's offices and dentist offices, then I recommend that you start with digital displays, because that's something that adds value to those offices, because those doctors know that if you're sitting in the waiting room and they can put some messaging up on displays that keeps you entertained so that you aren't upset that you have to wait a long time, or, and provides information or maybe upsell opportunities, then they'll invest in that technology. And it's something that you can leverage over and over again. What you shouldn't do is try to be all things to all people. In our case, our IoT journey started with ag tech, and it's grown from that into other areas, but it's only because we've developed that expertise. I think it's an area that not only MSPs need to look into, but even the manufacturers on the other side of the equation are looking for IT savvy partners to help them move into the next generation of their technologies. There's a company out of Chicago, KMC Controls, for example, that has developed some really new, compelling technology for building management, facilities management, but their existing dealer network doesn't really want to embrace the new technology. So they're looking outside of their traditional dealers, the same people that they've been working with for the last 30 years, to deploy this new technology. And so those are opportunities for MSPs that want to get into the IoT space to partner with somebody like that, that will help guide you on your journey.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Louis.
It's my pleasure, Jennifer.
That was Louis Alvarez, president and CEO of Alvarez Technology Group based in Salinas, California. I'll put links to that IoT vendor Louis mentions, KMC Controls, in today's show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/033. I'll also put Louis's contact details there in case you'd like to get in touch. And that's a wrap for today and for 2018. Frankly MSP will be back in your earbuds on January 10th, 2019. The best way to make sure you get that episode as it drops is to subscribe, of course. You'll find Frankly MSP in iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks. We'll be right back.